of soul, she's...
You've arrived here at a critical moment.
Hello, I'm Dan Brown.
And I'm Brandi Crawford Uryu. We are your TV BFFs, and this is an interview podcast about the TV shows that people love most. Each episode, we bring on a guest to discuss their top six shows of all time, based on what we call the BFF criteria. With so much TV out there, we want to know, what are the best shows you've ever seen? What are your absolute favorite shows? And what are the shows that you could watch on a loop forever?
That's right. Each episode, our guests will pick two shows in each of the three BFF categories, those being their best, favorite, and forever shows, all while choosing from the three genres of TV, which are drama, comedy, and all things unscripted.
And now let's get to our guest. And we're going to find out what's on their BFF criteria. We are so excited to have with us today, Miss Laura Von Holtz. Laura is an author and also a fellow podcaster. She hosts the Mermaid Podcast and Astrology Zoned Podcast, which is a Susan Miller fan podcast. And she also writes romance novels as Laura Lovely. And her next book, an Audible original, is going to be out this summer. Hi, Laura.
Hello.
Hey, Laura.
Hi. I feel like I'm on a game show and I'm like, I have to give myself a prize later because I'm getting anxious. So, okay. Can I call a friend?
You win. You win. You win.
Okay.
No matter what happens, you will win. There are no wrong answers.
Okay, great.
As long as you love the shows you're talking about, then it's all good.
Okay, thanks. Okay. I'm ready.
So, Laura, tell us a little bit before we get into all of it, like, what has been your kind of like TV experience? Do you watch a ton of it? Have you always watched a ton of it? Kind of what are your watching habits?
I have had a lot of different phases in life. And I also feel like I have changed as a person and a TV watcher during the pandemic. But like, fun fact, I grew up in Hawaii and I grew up in a really rural part of Hawaii. So like remote island, remote part of a remote island. And we like, for example, currently we have Wi-Fi, but like sometimes I can't email my dad because a cow has chewed through a wire.
Oh no.
So when I was growing up, we only had like four stations that came through antenna. And this was like in the mid 90s. So like I missed out on like a lot of MTV, My So-Called Life. Like I didn't know who Nirvana was until Kurt Cobain died.
Oh wow.
Like, yeah, like that's like, because the radio station only played like classic light FM, you know. So like so I like moved to New York to go to college and people had all of these pop culture references and I was like, I read about that in People magazine. That's what I knew. So there's a lot. I wasn't allowed to watch TV until I finished my homework, and I had like a lot of homework. So I was only I liked Friends. So my parents would let me pause my homework and watch Friends, which takes place in New York City. So you can see why I came. I was like, that looks great.
Like, are all the apartments like that? I want to live there.
I thought that they were. Yeah, definitely. So I missed out on a lot of TV, and then I didn't really have TV in my early 20s or after college. So like now that there's like Netflix and streaming, like I'm catching up on a lot of things that I missed from like the 90s and the early aughts. So that's me. I had not a lot of TV background, and now there's this whole world, and I'm in the present day and also the late 90s. Concurrently.
I love that.
Oh man, I love that. Yeah. You are getting to like watch everything. You are getting to watch everything for the first time.
Yes, yes. And it doesn't really hold up a lot of it, but it also explains things to me. Like I'm like, this is why like we all thought like that, because that was on TV. Oh, okay. I just like osmosis got it from People magazine and like the culture at large, but now I like see the origin points for like why everybody had an eating disorder in the early aughts because of the genes. And like, you know,
so, right.
Yeah. I'd never seen Buffy until my dentist had it on like a little screen.
And then, wow. Yeah. This is fun. Okay. Yeah. I feel like this is going to be a really fun conversation because kind of like how we approach this podcast, it's not just what's new and what's everyone watching. It's kind of what are the shows that broke through in a way for people.
Yeah.
So making up for lost time a little bit, I would love to hear, to get to know a little bit about your TV viewing history before we get to your criteria. Let's talk about the shows that almost made your list. So they're not your BFFs, but they're still pretty good friends. So what are some shows that just missed the cut?
Okay, so the shows that just missed the cut for me are The Watchmen / WandaVision.
Ooh.
I know.
Okay. Let's talk about those.
Those are related to in my mind because I don't think of myself as like a comic book person or much of a sci-fi person. I'm definitely a paranormal person, but that's what how you describe supernatural stuff in romance. So I'm like paranormal.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I got that word. So yeah, I have not been into like the Marvel universe at all or anything. And I was not, didn't read comic books. Or I didn't know anything about The Watchmen before I started watching it. And so, but I have read a lot of bonkers romance. So just quick spoiler, in Watchmen, there are squids that fall from the sky. So yeah. I was like, that makes sense. I mean, I read romance novels where like a vampire chews his arm off to prove his love. So I was like, I'm down.
A little squid rain is nothing.
Yeah, I was like, I'll just assume this is a comic book thing and I'll get to it. So I did really like The Watchmen because I was actually into it. Anything I didn't understand, I just assumed was from a comic book or something that I didn't have any reference point for. But I did love it because there was a supernatural element. There were like, wild plot twists. I love history. So that like the way it wove in American history was really awesome.
Yeah.
And then the same thing with WandaVision, I've seen a few of the Marvel movies, but like didn't really care. I'm just like, here's another supervillain, like swinging his dick around with another supervillain, destroying buildings. Right. Like, yay. Right. But then I was watching WandaVision, and then I went back and watched a bunch of the Marvel movies. And so this is controversial, and I apologize to longtime fans of the Marvel universe. But this is what happens when you open it up. You open up the universe, you get new fans.
That's right.
So to me, the entire Marvel universe is just a long form romance between Wanda and Vision. And Tony Stark is just like a wingman. Like he thinks he's the main character, but he's really actually like the baker in a Hallmark movie who just like makes the meat cute happen.
Right, exactly.
Like, yeah.
He's like in the early movies, he's just kind of getting the Jarvis AI ready for his eventual meet with Wanda 17 movies down the line.
Yep, exactly. So I was like, so now once I realized like, oh wait, this is a long form romance, I was just watching all the movies for Wanda and Vision and anything that was applicable. And then I was like, I love this. I was like, look at the friend circle that wants to get them together. So cute. So my apologies to the Marvel fans, the OG Marvel fans, because that's what it looks like to me. Like, but I love it.
Listen, I love a good hot take.
Yeah. Thank you.
I would love to talk about these a little bit before we move on. I love that you gravitated towards both Watchmen and WandaVision, because I think you're right. If you're not a superhero person, there's still a lot to like about both of those shows. There's, bigger, larger themes. Watchmen really gets into race in America in like a very historical way. It's the first instance that I think a lot of people, myself included, heard about the Tulsa massacre. And you don't need to be a big superhero fan to enjoy that show. In fact, like very few of them actually have superpowers, right? There's only like one or two that are like actually superpowered. And mostly it's a lot of people and a lot of cops in masks. And this came out like 2 years before the pandemic. So that's fucking weird to rewatch or to watch now, I can imagine. And it's just a really, really cool show. Brandy, have you seen Watchmen? I loved it and almost put it. It was almost in the conversation that we had about our Omo shows. I left it out because it's only one season. I don't think it's coming back, but I loved it a lot. Did you watch it?
I really liked it. And like you, Laura, I am not a comic book person. And it didn't really occur to me to watch it. But people were saying it was really good. And I was like, all right, well, I'll like try out the first episode. And then like it started with Tulsa.
Yeah. A lot of people watched that first episode and were like Googling, like, is this real? And you're like, that's only the tip of the iceberg. Yeah. Yeah.
It's nuts. But no, I really, really enjoyed Watchmen. Just thought it was so, so well done.
It's so good. And also, I mean, the key, I think, is that there's for me, obviously, you can tell that if there's a romance in it, I will immediately hook in, even if like the other stuff isn't meaningful. And also, I remember people being like, oh, Dr. Manhattan and like is a Blue Man. And I was like, I'm ready because one of my favorite romance series is called Ice Planet Barbarians. And there are these like hunky blue barbarians and they are wonderful. And I was like, I can fall in love with a blue guy. No problem. I
love hunky blue barbarians and White Walkers have got us all ready for
tall,
handsome blue men.
Yeah. So those were, and then the third one that didn't make it was Harlots, which is it's on Hulu and it's the 1700s and it's like a mob movie, but it's with brothel madams. So it's got great costumes, great female characters. Like it's really fun to see London in the 1700s, but like a diverse London. It's not just like, I read a lot of historical romance, which is just like ballrooms and gowns. You know, it's nice to see like the streets of London. How just one brothel madam like screw over another one. It's like, oh, it's crazy. the power moves in Harlots.
So my experience with Harlots is I've only ever encountered one other person who has seen it. So I'm very intrigued. I don't know much about it except that it deals with sex workers, right? And one of the characters from Downton Abbey is in it.
Yes.
Am I right? That's really all I know, though. I'd love to hear about your experience.
Those are the important things to know. That's it.
Yeah, and I don't know anything except that it was the poster was in my train station.
It's great. I feel like people kind of are sleeping on it, and I also don't know if they've had two seasons. I don't know if there's going to be a third. I think it's in. I don't know because of the pandemic. I don't know what's going on. But no, it is wonderful. It like I said, it follows like the main character, oh my gosh, and everyone's name escapes me the minute I talk about it. But so the main character who owns a smaller brothel, she's like been saving up money and she wants to move to a better street in London so that like she can charge more and have parties and it's all great. And of course, like her plans are always gone awry. Then there's the rival brothel, which has like, it's in Golden Square, which when I was in London, I walked into Golden Square and I was like, now I know where this, oh my God. But that's like where the, like the beautifully dressed ones are. And like the madam is always making the girls in like tableaus and the fancy rich men come in and they like eat grapes and like watch them in their tableaus and the girls can like speak other languages and are like can play piano.
So very cultured.
Yeah, it's very cultured. It's very refined. There's like, and but also she's known for like being able to like cater to certain tastes, which comes up because there's like a secret society of like, of course, lords from the House of Lords who are. I mean, what's great about Harlots is that like every single sex worker, you're like, this is the smartest and most brilliant and funniest woman I've ever met. And every man who has power looks like the biggest infant and dweeb. And you're like, how are you? You have no survival skills, first of all.
Evolution should have gotten you out of here.
Yeah. So it really shows you like in the power dynamics between class that like the lords are like ruthless and useless and the sex workers are like ruthless, useful and amazing and can run anything and are really running the show behind the scenes. So it's really interesting to see like the interplay between how they affect like the, you know, the proper relationships that the front facing relationships that a lot of the men have and then like what their all their side relationships are. Sybil from Downton Abbey, who's the actress's name I forget, of course, she is in it and she's wonderful and compelling. And I think I kind of imagine like if Sybil hadn't married Branson, that like then she became a sex worker in London and was like telling everybody off and running the show. And I was like, yeah, she's organizing, they're getting rights.
That tracks with Sybil. She would have been about that. Hell
100.
Yeah.
Maybe this was her previous life because I think that's how the time works better. But yeah, I was like, this tracks. I love it. Yeah.
That is great. Okay. Well, I love your almost shows. And now I want to talk about your BFF criteria. So we asked you to pick 6 shows in total. So that's 2 shows in each of the 3 categories. And those categories are best, favorite, and forever. So your best shows are the ones that you think are just the most artistic, well executed, or just overall like the best made shows you've ever seen. Your favorite shows are the ones that just hold a place near and dear to your heart, mean something to you personally. And the best way to describe the forever category is that if you die tomorrow and in the afterlife, you get to choose 2 shows to watch in order from pilot to finale over and over for infinity. What are they?
Right. So there's a couple rules as well. So for each category, we had you choose from the three overall genres of TV, which are comedy, drama, and unscripted. With unscripted meaning everything from reality shows to documentary series and everything in between, but there must be multiple episodes. So no one-off docs allowed. But other than that, it can be anything. And this is crucial. There's no such thing as guilty pleasures here. So whatever you like.
We respect it all.
We love it. Let's talk about it. And then the only other little rule is you can't double up on a genre in any category. And this is where it can get a little tricky. So if you pick a comedy in your best category, for instance, your other pick must be an unscripted or a drama. Make sense?
Yep.
All right, let's get into it. So Laura, let's start with the best category. We'll go one at a time. What is your first best show?
Okay, my first best show, game show music, please, is, thank you, Peaky Blinders.
Yes. Oh my God, okay, I love it. Okay. Peaky fucking Blinders.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Literally, the other night I have insomnia and I never go to sleep when I should. So I like told myself to go to bed. I was like, by order of the Peaky Blinders. And I was like, okay. And I went to bed. Worked. It really worked. I can respect it.
Yeah, that's yeah. How you know it's real.
Yeah, yeah.
So for anyone who hasn't seen the show, what is Peaky Blinders and why is it in this spot on your list?
Sure. So Peaky Blinders, it takes place in Birmingham and the accents are really thick. So sometimes I have to put on the subtitles. Mm-hmm. It takes place right after World War I and it's a family gang and they are always looking for a new enterprise and to build themselves up and amass wealth and power. The main character in charge is Thomas Shelby, who is just dreamy and ruthless, but dreamy. Yeah. So,
like, those blue eyes can be deceiving.
I know. And what's behind the blue eyes? I just wonder. And so what I love about it is that I love a family saga and, you know, he's family is number one. It's like family and how to promote the family. So he's like always scheming. And of course, like he's got this Aunt Polly who's kind of helped raise them. And she's wonderful because she's like super powerful and super ruthless, but like also totally emotionally damaged. And like they all have a ton of trauma from their upbringing.
Yeah.
And so like usually they're kind of under control and then one of them will wild out and ruin like his carefully laid plan. And you're like, he's just trying to get you guys somewhere. And you're all like, I don't feel like it today.
Like, you know? Look at you, Arthur.
Yeah, exactly. Looking at you, Arthur. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, so they are each well-versed in the art of self-sabotage. Yes. Like, but there is an enemies to lovers romance in the first season, which is one of my favorite tropes. And so I won't spoil it, but there is a counterpoint to Tommy Shelby and she seems quite innocuous at first. And then there's secrets. But I love an enemies to lovers romance. So once I realized there was a romance, I was like even more hooked. And for some reason, because like there's a romance, I'm like, well, I forgive you for like killing and like theft and like you're just trying to get ahead because all these other gangs are also terrible. So I don't know why in the case of the Peaky Blinders I can handle violence, but for some reason when Tommy Shelby's doing it, I'm like, look, it's just all part of the game. Like if you want your EIQ, so it's for family, okay? Family is number one. For some reason I'm willing to excuse it, but yeah, I think the like all of the different games that he's playing and there's every single scene that he goes into, you're like never sure what angle he's actually playing. And then later on, there's always a twist. And then, oh my God, I can't remember. Oh my God, he's the actor who I love all the time with the biceps. Okay, so that's helpful.
Are you talking like a camp?
Tom Hardy.
Thank you. Oh my gosh. Yes. Okay, yeah. He has a great character. Yes.
Yes.
Wait, okay. Tom Hardy is in it.
Yeah. And you wouldn't really recognize him because you don't recognize him at first because like just the way they've kind of roughed him up and everything. And he is like, I mean, just off his rocker, but he runs like a Jewish gang. And so like, he's just off his rocker. Like he's inviting people over for like Passover meals, which turn into like red weddings. Like it's just like, oh my God. But he is phenomenal. Cause he is so you cannot predict him. You cannot predict what he's going to do at all. And like, so like cool, calm, collected Tommy Shelby, who's always got like something going on behind his blue eyes, has this like great foil and like this completely erratic and ruthless counterpoint.
There is one thing, though, however, that we do need to discuss.
What would that be?
It says here, 20% pay to me of your export business.
As we agreed on the telephone.
No. I've had my lawyer draw this up. It says that here that 100% of your business goes to me.
I see. That's funny. That is.
What?
Nah, that's funny. Just so I
need. Is your pet?
I understand.
Good. Get on with it.
Well, I have an associate waiting for me at the door. Now, he looks like a quiet boy, but he is actually an anarchist from Kentish Town.
Tommy, I'm going to fucking shoot you.
But Tom Hardy, and they also seem to be like kind of best friends in a way. Like, I think it's they're the only people who actually understand each other.
Right.
So like as the seasons progress, you're kind of like, this is like a bromance run by Satan. It's like you never know what side anyone is playing. And like, and I'm like, and Tommy Shelby's just keeping it up in his head. I'm like, I would need multiple planners and spreadsheets to like plot this out. But he's just got like strategies for days. Oh, there's also a thing of like a lot of them were in World War One. And so a lot of them have like shell shock or like you keep seeing like different vets and like what's happened to them. And I think that's also just really interesting because sometimes like having been in the war is helpful because it'll give them like, you're a soldier, and they'll give them like a little bit of a pass for something. And then sometimes it's all like, it'll be a crucial moment. And one of them is having a PTSD flash. So like, it's kind of seeing that angle of like right after, because I feel like a lot of historical shows like to focus on like World War One or World War Two, but like the time period in between that leads up like through Prohibition and the Great Depression and all that's American history. But like in those, that between time is really rich with a lot of shenanigans. And it's really interesting when it intersects with broader history.
Mm-hmm. I love that pick. So Laura, are you caught up? Are you up to speed with Kiki?
I am fully watched and fully watched. Mm-hmm. And I'll stand by it. And there's a new season coming that hasn't been in the US yet. So I think whatever's not been released yet on Netflix is what I'm waiting.
Got it. But you saw the one with like, I'll just say The Politician.
Yes.
Right. Okay, yeah. Great. Which ended with a twist that I didn't see coming, which is really cool. I'm very excited for the next season as well. I want to recommend a show to you. The same guy who made Peaky Blinders, and there's a lot of like similar familiar vibes, but there's also a little bit of like the paranormal aspect in there and a supremely fucked up love story that I think you're really going to dig.
Oh, thank you.
You are speaking you, the language.
Thank you. What is it?
It's called Taboo.
Okay.
It's called Taboo. It was on FX. It only ran for one season. We don't know if it's coming back. It stars Tom Hardy.
Oh, what? Yeah. Great.
Stars Tom Hardy. I forget the precise like time period, but the East India Trading Company is like the big bad. So it's like that.
Oh, okay, that's great. Oh, I like it when the villains are actually the villains. Yeah. Like, oh wow. And,
but it's creepy. It's wild. It's kind of scary, but not really. It's out there. I liked it a lot. I want to watch it again. It's probably on Hulu. If it was an FX show, I think it's probably going to be on Hulu. I would check out Taboo. And if anyone listening is also a Peaky Blinders fan, a Tom Hardy fan, a dark historical British historical fiction fan, check it out. It's really, really good.
I remember seeing previews for it while watching Atlanta.
Yeah, it's like Tom Hardy. It is most Tom Hardiest. You know, like he's just like really going for it, really making some distinct character choices and the way he looks and the way he walks and the way his hair is matted down. And like all it's like very peak Tom Hardy, I would say.
I'm down. I mean, also, he's a ginger. And I if you read my romance novels, you can tell very quickly that I have a big affinity for the gingers. So justice for gingers.
Justice for gingers. I love it. Will there be any gingers in your second best show? Laura, what is your second pick in the best category?
Oh, I think there are gingers in the background of this. So my second show in the best category is Ted Lasso.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. I love it.
Which I've only recently watched it, so I like it got into the best category. I loved it. It's hilarious. It's funny. I really felt vindicated because as a very like enthusiastic and optimistic person, usually those people are cast as like in a Pollyanna role and like it's just written all off as like innocence or being naive or something. And like Ted Lasso's like soft skills are like shining in this show, you know, like, and the whole show is about, if you don't know, it's Ted Lasso is a coach and he's hired by a British football team, what we would call soccer. he's hired by this team to like coach them, and he's never coached football before.
Right. He's an American football coach coming over to coach European British football.
Exactly. And so everyone's like, and they call him like, what's this wanker doing? He's just constantly walking around. They're like, wanker, hey, you know, like, so they, he gets no respect. But he's so positive and so encouraging. And I like by the end of the season, like everyone has gotten on his side, and you like, you realize like just kind of what the genius it takes to like bring people together and get them to like be their best selves. And I was like, you know, my whole life, men have been trying to represent me, and this is the first time they got it right. So, thanks, Ted Lasso. Thank you. But yeah, so that's why I liked it. I was like, oh, I feel actually like represented, like as like a very positive, enthusiastic person who's always encouraging people. But like Ted Lasso, it's like the like optimistic, like diehard positive person is in charge, and like you are eventually going to come along. And it's just, and the character reveals, or the character arcs are great. Every single reveal is wonderful, you know. And there's a local pub where everyone goes to watch that team, and they're all cheering for it, you know, and they are all like horrified that there's this American man coaching their precious team. And so like the whole town, like the whole town is a character, the pub is a character. There is a little bit of a like romance in it. So that's great. And like the women are great. And everyone is such a distinct and amazing personality. And just to watch them all come together, as the whole point is that like the team has been failing, and he's there to save the team and like get them back on top. And so to like watch, I think also just like in such a like difficult year, to watch somebody like people come together and to see like what kind of leadership it takes for people to like get out of their own way and to like become leaders within themselves was just so heartwarming and wonderful. And then you have this like, you know, American guy with all of these like, he's got all these little puns and sayings, and like everyone is like, no.
Except for when they do. Like
when they do. It's almost a different thing for me too, is I am a very funny person, but when I watch comedy TV, I don't always laugh or like it. Like there's a lot of like regular comedy shows that everyone goes bananas for, and I'm like, I laugh twice.
Tough crowd over here.
But if you took me to a comedy show, I am like I have been paid to be an audience plant. Like that's how good my laugh is. So ooh, like it's really bewildering to me when I watch like a TV show and they're laughing. I'm like, meh, workshop that one. But Ted Lasso, I was like constantly laughing and constantly engaged. So like I felt like besides just like a like beautiful example of humanity as a comedic show and as like an ensemble comedic performance, it's really stands out for that one. I think it's going to get another season.
It's getting two actually.
Oh, good. Okay.
After the first one, it was renewed for two. This is funny. I'm having deja vu, Brandon. I'm having flashbacks to our Almost Shows episode, the very first episode of this podcast, because if you remember, a couple of my Almost picks, and I talked about them back to back, I think were Peaky Blinders and Ted Lasso.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm.
It's true.
Not quite in the criteria, but we're very close. And I think, Randy, those are the two that you said you wanted to check out, actually, when we were
talking
about which ones should we check out on each other's list. Have you dipped into Ted Lasso yet?
I have not dipped into Ted Lasso yet, but I am very, very excited to, because I've only heard good things about it. But it's just like having two small children has really cut into my TV time. And it's like, I have all my shows that I need to keep up with. And it's so hard to like start, like get into something new. But I made the choice of getting into Peaky Blinders. I watched the first episode. I'm like, I can keep watching this. I asked Moses if he wanted to watch with me, because if he says no, that means I can watch whatever I want. But he said he might want to watch it. So now that's where
he's probably going to want to watch Ted Lasso too.
Ted Lasso is shorter episodes too, though. So I think that'll be, that's also why it worked for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I'm really looking forward to, well, I mean, you guys like really just like sold me on two shows. So I don't know, those people who are listening right now, I hope that you have also been sold.
Yeah.
Cause like, I'm just like, maybe like after this, like I'm going to go and watch an episode of Ted Lasso. All right. So Peaky Blinders and Ted Lasso for your best shows. Let's
Love
move
it.
Into favorites. So what are the, and this, I'm very interested to hear what these two shows are, because usually, you know, it's like, oh my God, I grew up watching this. And you just told us that you didn't grow up watching anything. So what is your first favorite show?
Okay, so I have to preface this with saying all of my faves are problematic.
All right.
I'm just going to be blatant about that. And I'm going to critique them with, like, I am loyal to them and love them, but I will also tell you what's wrong with them. So the first one is Outlander.
Ooh.
I know.
Romance stories.
Yeah, that's a like romance city.
Yeah. So Outlander, so the books I read at like age 15 or 16, and like my stepmother gave them to me and my sisters and was like, read this. But she also gave us Clan of the Cave Bear, which if you don't know, has like a lot of Neanderthal sex in it. So like,
oh, wow.
So we were like, oh, and I was already like reading Flowers in the Attic, like, woo. So Outlander holds like a nostalgic place in my heart because like my whole family read the books, and my sister and I, we have some Scottish ancestry, and we were in Scotland like running around trying to find our like ancestral castles. And then half the time we were like, but where's Jamie Fraser? Like, but this is before like Outlander, it was big as a book, but before it got big, it's like now all of Scottish tourism is just about Outlander.
So what is Outlander for those who haven't heard?
So Outlander, well, what's really interesting about Outlander is it is a romance, but it bridges so many different genres that people have a hard time categorizing it. But Outlander is, it's got time travel, it's got historical fiction, it's got romance. But the premise of it is that there is a woman named Claire, and she is a nurse. She's been a nurse in World War II, and she and her husband were separated during the war. So like after the war ends, they take a little second honeymoon to Inverness, and like she's a nurse and she's got like some interest in botany. So she's like collecting flowers by a stone circle. And of course there's like the stone circle has some legends about it. And she's like, what's that noise? And then like falls through the stone circle through time ends up in the 1740s, which are you having me already here? I'm like in love with this book. Whatever happened, I'm like, yes.
Yep.
So what I love about like these kind of time travel things is she arrives in her like 1940s clothes, which look like to them underwear, and they're like, and like some Highlanders find her and they're like, why is this a woman running around in her underwear? Is she a sex worker or like what? And she's like, oh, have the thing on her feet, like, oh, she's English, and this is a time when like England was occupying Scotland. They were two separate things,
right?
Mm-hmm. So like the red coats, you know, and of course, like as an American, I'm like, yeah, those red coats,
like, you know, get those guys out of here.
Yeah, I'm loving it. I'm like, I know what they do. Yeah,
so like this won't end well.
Right. So she is briefly captured by a red coat captain who is the ancestor of her husband back in the 1940s. So it's very disconcerting because he looks just like her husband. And then she's like, oh, but he's very evil. He's like a sadist. He's just evil.
Is it the same actor or no?
It's different. The same actor in the show. Yeah, he's wonderful. He's so good at it. He's like, what's that movie, The Orphan Sisters, where like it's one actress that plays all of them? The Orphan? No? Orphan Black?
Orphan Black, yes.
Okay. Tatiana Maslany, yep.
Yes, mm-hmm. It's like she plays, like, it's like that. It's great. So she's rescued from the evil captain who looks like her husband, like, by this band of Highlanders. And, like, they're all like, what are you doing? Are you, like, a witch? But she has these healing capabilities, so they bring her back to their castle where, like, the seat of the clan, and she's, like, healing people, and they're like, all right, but she could be a spy, like, this English lady, you know? So they don't know really what to do with her, and, like, she's kind of starts getting to know this like young buck. She's like 28, which is like, they're like, you look so good for 28, because like by age 28 in the 1740s, right, you have like no teeth, you've had seven children, you're dead. And they're like, damn girl, like, you look good. She's like, yeah, I'm 28. 28. And so she has to pretend that like her husband died or something, because they keep like, she's a wedding ring and they keep asking. And there's this young buck, James Fraser, who's like, he's like so strong and so buff and a ginger, and he's also like so noble. Like there's this girl that's supposed to be punished, and he's like, that'll be too embarrassing for her. So he like in public like takes her beating for her, and you're like, oh, so noble. I love him. Okay. So anyway, they start to kind of fall in love. They don't really fall in love, but like they're getting along. And then some complications ensue, and she is forced to marry him, or like she will be like, it'll be like certain death, and she'll have to go to the Captain Blackjack Randall. And so she and Jamie have to get married. And then in the show in season one, there's these brief couple of like half of episodes where the show is what I wanted the show and the books to always be, which is just like Jamie and Claire riding around Scotland. She like sets some broken bones, and then they have like sex on the moors a lot. And I'm like, yes, I love it. This is why, like, I was like, when you do the show, just get rid of the bad parts of the book, because the terrible parts of the book are that A, there's a lot of violence, and then B, there's a lot of sexual assault. So trigger warning there. So, and they film it and handle it well in the show, but I'm like, and there's several seasons that follow the rest of the book. And at some point I just stopped reading the books because A, I didn't care anymore about the plot, because I just wanted them to go back to Scotland and right. like do what I want them to do.
Right. On the moors, please.
Yeah, on the moors, please. Like, that was going great. You were happy.
You were getting it on the moors.
Yeah. I was like, why change? actually my favorite part is season two, when Claire is in back in the 1940s, and she like is in the hospital, and like someone is looking at her outfit, like a historian is looking at her outfit, and he's like, where did she get this amazing recreation of 1700s clothing? You know, and it's like, so I love it for like the history, I love it for the time travel, I love it for the romance, I love it for like the epic scope and the like the bananas premise of like fall back through time and fall in love with like this noble Highlander who's just wonderful. But so much of the stuff that happens in it is so problematic and I think unnecessary, and I don't know. Other people love the books and they love what happens. I don't. I just want them to go back to the middle of season one where they were happy for a day and stay there.
I love it. So your favorite show is actually like, well, this very specific section of this specific season of the show is my favorite show.
And that's why it couldn't be a forever show, because there's plenty of episodes that I skip. I fast forward through stuff. I'll be like, I hate that guy, not watching his scenes. Like,
get out of here.
Yeah, get out of here. Yeah. So, but yeah, so it is a favorite, but like I said, it's problematic. Proceed with caution.
Dan, have you watched?
I haven't watched. I know of it. I like the creator a lot and I'm intrigued by it. I like time travel bullshit. I like historical fiction, alternate versions of history stuff. So I feel like that'll be one where like, oh, I have the flu in 3 days and I'm just going to watch the whole thing, like that sort of deal.
That's a perfect time. Or like an airplane would be really good too. Yeah. Like, yeah, yeah. So my second show?
Yeah, what's your second favorite show?
Yeah.
Okay, so my second favorite show, again, problematic, but dun 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 dun, dun Sex in the City.
Okay. Ooh, nice.
I love it. Okay. Can't wait to talk about the problems with it.
Great. Yeah, so many. So I picked this one because it was, again, like a formative experience, like Outlander. It came out, I think, like as I was graduating college. I definitely remember when I first graduated from college, I lived in Astoria, and we didn't have HBO or anything, but my friends lived in Park Slope and there was a bar that would play episodes. So I would take the train from Astoria to Park Slope, which if you don't live in New York, that's like way too much. way too much effort. Yeah. Way too much effort. But this bar had like a party. I remember they had like, it also was like, you know, when Sex and the City was on, like I had just moved to New York and it was this very like aspirational thing. Like they were all drinking Cosmos and dressing up. So we would like, whatever outfit I had bought at like Strawberry that looked like Sex and the City, I would put on and I would go, and then there would be like $5 chocolate martinis and they put like actual chocolate chips at the bottom. And then we would like order our dinner and our $5 martinis. And we would be like watching Sex and the City on the big screen. And it was a big deal, like, cause we traveled. And then how many times did we throw up on the subway on the way back home drunk on a Sunday? Like so much, but like a lot of time, you know, like, and then my roommate's boyfriend got like a bootleg something that made us be able to watch it at home. So, and like, I remember when it ended, we threw this like enormous party where we had like fancy cheese and pictures of Cosmo and everyone. Like, we sent out like formal invitations, like the end of an era, because that was a tagline for the last season, was the end of an era. And we had like people over and we were all watching it. And like, and I remember being like legit heartbroken and being like, what happens if a situation comes up in my adult life that was not covered on Sex and the City? How will I respond?
It's like, yeah, my instruction manual has stopped printing.
Yeah. I'm from Hawaii, which is like an alternate universe. I time traveled via airplane to New York City, and I'm like the culture shock is real, and I'm just trying to like, and so like, and I think the friend circle was really tight. You know, that was like when everyone was into being like, are you a Samantha or Miranda or like, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. It was like a real identity. It was like the Hogwarts houses, like how you sorted yourself.
Right.
That's true.
And so it was just like very informative, and we watched it so much. And you know, I mean, I have like my friend's little sister, like she moved to New York to be a fashion designer, and in her suitcase was her box set of Sex and the City DVDs. Like if you moved here in like 2002 to 2007, like it was why you were coming. So I mean, there's so many problematic things with it. Like, it is not as I grew up and found out, it is not the definition of femininity. Like, there are other ways to be a woman. There's four ways. Pick one. You can't be two at once. Okay. Like, yeah. But yeah, so nothing about that show I would like if I watched it today, but it was so formative for like the first few years in New York. So yep, that's Sex and the City. Bless.
So moving on to the final category, the forever show. So these are the shows that you would watch on a loop. You can't skip any seasons. You can't fast forward. You can't skip episodes. You can jump in between the two shows, so you can kind of bounce back and forth.
Okay.
With all that in mind, what is your first forever show?
My first forever show is Downton Abbey.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's coming back around.
Yeah. And I can attest to the fact that I can watch every single episode, because I did a rewatch kind of like around the election up through Christmas or just after, of at least like seasons 3, 4, and 5. And I watched every episode, even the ones that I don't like. I think like if you're seeing themes for me, like there's a family saga, it's a period piece. Mm-hmm. There's a romance that's central to it, a few romances. Uh-huh. It really sits in that place for me of like, it's a fantasy escape. Let me get very involved in these small problems. I watched like seasons 3, 4, and 5, and then I watched episode 1 right away. And to see like the last episode and the first episode, like back to back, I was like, oh, the character growth that happens here is like quite remarkable, because yeah. the first season, it's just like, the things that happen are so scandalous. I'm like, later on, your daughter runs away with a chauffeur. Your other daughter has like a baby out of wedlock. And they're like, that's fine. Family's family. Like, and in the first one, it's like, if you aren't, like, if you sit wrong at dinner, like, oh, black sheep. You know? Yeah. I love every single character. Like the upstairs, the downstairs thing is so great. Like I think what's so interesting is like a modern person to watch some people live with servants and see how close that relationship is and have the status still be so off. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting. And then also what I think is so funny is the whole thing is like Downton Abbey is like a certain type of house that requires a certain type of staff, and like there's a certain way to run it, and it requires a lot of work to preserve it and keep it going as like the world evolves and changes, and they go through like the war and you know, and like legacy, and how are things like, how is it going to continue? And it's so funny, because like you get so invested. I'm like, Downton Abbey, you have to save it. And but yeah. Like conversely with the royal family, like right now I'm like, meh, burn it all down. Like, do you have to save this? Like, it was like, it went in the era that it was like very cute, and you were giving jobs to village people, but now they can go be secretaries and like middle class workers. Like, there is a middle class now. Mm-hmm. So like, it seems like so important to preserve it. And like, of course I'm in, because I'm like, Mary Crawley, you can do it. You can save. I think I also have affinity for it because like Mary Crawley ends up being like the kind of leader of the next generation for it. And like, and she's going to preserve the legacy of it. And I come from a family ranch, and my sister is the one that's taking over from my dad. And so like, I think just having like I'm watching a fictional woman like take charge of a major estate and like be like, how do I keep this going? Like, how progressive do I need to be? Like, I think personally, that's some of my affinity for it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think that's when the show really took off for me. Like I watched it and I liked it a lot. I'm a bit of a period piece Anglophile myself. Love this genre of TV. I really liked season two. I think that was one of my favorites because of how they dealt with the war and how you really saw that Downton Abbey changed and had to change to keep up with what was going on and kind of reinvent itself. And then from there, like they kind of were able to expand on that more. Like I really liked the stuff like you were mentioning where you saw that it wasn't just this house with an upstairs and a downstairs. It wasn't just grounds. It was this farm and that farm and part of the village. And it really felt like, oh, wow, there's like a lot of responsibility here. It does feel like a major, like almost corporation in a way I wasn't expecting, you know?
And some of the farms had been farmed for like 200 years by the same family, you know? So there was like this interdependence and this legacy where like the small farmer is trying to preserve what he's built as much as like the Earl of Grantham is. And so I think I like the idea of legacy is always interesting to me, and like the idea of like perpetuation and like modernizing and, you know, being progressive and also how to make like family dynamics work. And is because I have seen some stuff in my time, like having a family ranch and watching other family ranches. Like somebody should make Brandy, you need to produce a show because agriculture, like in Downton Abbey, it's like, oh, we have some tenants, we have some farms, we have some sheep, but like agriculture is a major business. Like it's one, you know, when it's a big family business, a lot of times it's passed down to families, and it is so hard to make it work in like a modern era with like modern regulations and like the way people like have land, or they lease it or own it, and like the taxes, like all of it is so intense and so complicated. And then there's also like not a lot of draw to being in agriculture right now and running like estates or farms or things. Like there's, you can, you know, get a better job with like that's less backbreaking. And so not that the Crawleys do a lot of work, but they end up having to do some like pig wrangling and stuff. Sure, yeah. But I just think it's so interesting to watch, like with the hindsight of being like in the modern era, watching like how something in the 1920s is trying to modernize to catch up, you know? And like, mm-hmm. And of course, like, and also I love the little jokes where like, oh, we would never have people come in the house. And I'm like, that house that you're filming in is like only alive now because people rent it for filming and parties, you know, like that's what happens to those houses. Yeah, so it's like that kind of stuff is fun, but yeah, the family dynamics and like, just how, I think like one of the themes of the show that I think is really beautiful is that there's a long theme of forgiveness, because things keep happening and it's so against what people are used to, and they have to keep reframing like their own like moral compass, and they have to keep like forgiving and accepting and moving on and being like, you know, really looking at like what people's hearts and integrity is. And so it really becomes about the people's character versus their status. And like, you know, they start to keep forgiving people when they know like the truth of their heart. So I think it's a very compassionate show in that way. And that's something that I like.
Yeah. That Branson storyline, I think, is kind of crystallizes everything you just talked about. And is one of my favorite, you know, character development stories. I think kind of his and Mary's kind of mirrored a little bit in where they both start and where they both end. And you know, kind of starting off on opposing sides and opposed to each other in a lot of ways. And then that changes as it goes on. Loved that show. A really, really good forever pick. And the sort of vibe I wouldn't mind forever in the afterlife, I'll tell you what.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
I think I'm like one of the only people who hasn't seen Downton Abbey. Yet I work in a profession where at least once a week, somebody's like, I don't know, can it be kind of like a Downton Abbey feeling? You know, upstairs, downstairs. Can we do that? Like, and I'm always like, sure. Just take a look and see what you're talking about here. Right.
But it is one of those shows that I think has been big enough where, you know, it's seeped into the culture and the zeitgeist. You could say Downton Abbey, you know, that it's an upstairs, downstairs. You kind of know the broad strokes.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, I feel like I know, I pretty much get what it is. And it's not that I wouldn't be, I think that I would really like it if I watched it. I think that like when everyone started watching it, it wasn't, because like, was it on PBS or something?
Yeah, it was a PBS masterpiece.
Okay. Yeah. And I mean, obviously I did have PBS. So like, I'm not trying to like go that route and be like, but I didn't have the channel. Like, no, I had PBS. Okay. I just wasn't turning to that. Okay. Right. I was probably watching the CW.
I think everyone has PBS is the whole thing about it.
I don't know about that.
Well, if you don't have cable or haven't cut the cord, I don't. If you're only doing streaming, maybe. I don't know. Actually, I don't know how TV works anymore. I never know how TV works. People are like, did you know there's a TV you can put your Netflix on? I'm like, no. I just watch it on my iPad or get the DVD. Like, how does TV work? I don't know.
Laura, I have a question. I have a follow-up question.
Yeah.
So this is a forever show. This is a world that you know, I don't think it'd be a stretch to say would be comfortable living in if you were able to.
Yeah.
Upstairs or downstairs?
Upstairs. It's the upstairs, obviously. The dresses, the outfits, breakfast in bed, like upstairs. Like, I want to write letters and cause trouble. Like, I want to spend all day doing my correspondence in the library and then like take a walk in the gardens in the afternoon and then be like, yes, another 3-course meal when I always don't have heart problems. I don't know. Like, great.
Drinking sherry out of glasses at the size of a thimble. So
literally all, yeah, all really rich people used to do is just like write letters and eat.
That's yeah. What it looks like. I mean, yeah.
A lot of hunting.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I'll go on the rides. Like, actually, I did go on this big deep dive because I was like watching her ride side saddle. And I came up from a family that rides horses, but did not ride side saddle. And so I went into this like whole deep dive on like, how do you ride side saddle? And like, when did it come out of fashion? And like, when did the clothes change? It's just very interesting to me. So I would spend like, yeah, I would learn to ride side saddle and I would live upstairs. And then I would like gossip with Carson a lot.
Sure.
Yes.
So you want to be Mary Crowley is what you're describing.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, I mean, I want to be Sybil, but I think she's too good for me. Actually, though, I know, I think actually who I do want to be is I don't have the wit. I mean, the Dowager Countess, like, she's aspirational.
I really think you should go to bed. No bride wants to look tired at her wedding. It either means she's anxious or been up to no good.
I won't sleep a wink.
Tonight or tomorrow?
Sybil, vulgarity is no substitute for wit.
Well, you started it.
But I think I'll be fine as, like, I'd even be Edith. Like, it's, you know.
Edith at the end is someone to aspire to.
Edith at the end really comes through. It is definitely like, it's like when Neville Longbottom got really hot.
Sure.
It's like that.
Got it.
It's like that. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. We're down to the last pick. The last show on your top 6 shows of all time. Laura, what is your final forever show?
Okay, in the afterlife, I would like to be in The Good Place.
Ooh, perfect. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I picked it because, again, there's a romance, Chidi and Eleanor, love them forever. And I was like, I don't understand any of the philosophy, so I would need an eternity to finally grasp every concept and like take all my notes and actually like really follow that part. Like, I think they do a great job in the show where like you get enough of it to understand where they're coming from. But every time I tried to think harder about it, like I didn't take philosophy in college. I made out with a couple of guys that took philosophy and it was always like way too much. It was like I was like, you can have rules about life without thinking that hard about it. Like, it's actually right. You make it sound like it's hard to have ethics, and I actually think it's quite easy, but now that you've explained it to me for an hour, I'm kind of thinking that evil is the way to go. So, and I feel like Eleanor in that way, when like Chidi's teaching her things, she's like, this is way more complicated than it needs to be. Right. But every episode is so great. It's so funny. There's always something new that happens. There's something you like notice for the first time. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's like, I could watch one watch just like looking for like at the background, like the set dressing, because there's always jokes and things in it. It's so layered.
Yeah. The names of all of the places in every location is just a pun heaven.
Yes, exactly.
They're so good.
Exactly. So yeah, and I think, and again, like in like in a Ted Lasso kind of vibe, like the show is like has so much that shines about it, about like people like being good to each other, working together, the teamwork, the team building, like, and that, like, and the arc of the show is about like, you know, finally achieving like the best parts of yourself, you know, and that and all the reboots that they go through in The Good Place, like there's something about them is always preserved that like, you know, makes it work. And then they fail and have to reboot again. But I think like more than a lot of things, that show makes you really believe in like the power of like individual humanity and like the innate goodness of people, which is hard to believe in sometimes. But I think that's one of the powers of The Good Place, is that like, it believes in each of these people, like, and believes in them even when there's no evidence to support that.
And now I want to say this.
Okay.
Eleanor, I have spent my entire life in pursuit of fundamental truths about the universe, and now we can actually learn about them together as soulmates. It's overwhelming.
Chidi, you'll stand by my side no matter what, right?
Of course I will.
Promise me. Say, I promise I will never betray you for any reason.
Eleanor, I swear that I will never say or do anything to cause you any harm.
Good. Because those aren't my memories. I wasn't a lawyer. I never went to the Ukraine. I hate clowns. There's been a big mistake. I'm not supposed to be here.
Wait, what?
I really like it. I am probably like midway through season three, or maybe I'm almost at the end of season two. How many seasons are there total?
Three or four.
There's four seasons.
I really like it. Like, and I started it. I didn't watch it while it was on NBC. I started it during maternity leave. I started The Good Place and Schitt's Creek. But what I really liked about The Good Place was that I really didn't know anything about it going into it, except for like surface, like they're in heaven.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So like what was so awesome about watching it was that I was just so surprised with every single twist that happened.
Yeah.
And that it was just great. It was so refreshing to watch something that feels so original.
It does.
Like I have nothing to really compare it to. Even though the guy who did it, he did The Office and Parks and Rec.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so Mike Schur created the show. He created Parks and Rec before that and worked on The Office. But I think what this show, it feels very much like his crowning achievement. It feels like a passion project for him. I actually listened to the Good Place podcast, which is a great companion listen, by the way. And he guested on there several times, and just the writers, the way they talk about it, like, it seems like they had like long debates and discussions about ethics, and there would be homework and read these books and read these articles, and you know, writers were free to like, I learned about this new thing, let's talk about it, and then that worked its way into the show. So it really felt like you were learning, like you were saying, Laura, like you can really pick up lessons and teachings and learn about philosophy and ethics in a way that's just so freaking hysterical, and it looks great, and the acting is awesome, and it's like one of the best recent comedy casts that you'll see, and it's just kind of firing all cylinders, and it didn't overstay its welcome. You know, the four seasons were pretty tight, and like a well-told, you know, pretty compact story that in anyone else's hands might have gone on for 9 or 10 seasons. Like, Laura, they burned through story in those seasons. Like, as someone who creates story herself, like, that's a feat. That's impressive. That's like, you know, hold my beer. Let me do 3 seasons worth of story in 2 episodes.
Oh yeah. And like all the devices they use, like there's a lot of like really great, like structural thing. I think what they did a really good job is, I think sometimes comedy is underappreciated for like the integrity of its structure. And so like with using a lot of like very basic comedic structures, they could keep the plot moving like really quickly and keep the reveals coming and pack a lot into one. And then because each character was also so funny that like everything could be layered and like so much could be accomplished with just like 1 or 2 lines, because they have these like amazing writers and amazing actors. But I think they really like was a great use of basic comedic structure to like pack a plot in.
Wow. Beautifully said.
Yeah.
We have, speaking of twists and turns, we have a twist. We did not reveal this to you before the episode. So
are there prizes? Is this a game show now? sorry. My writing brain started being like, what's the plot reveal? Okay.
Well, what if we told you that of your 2 forever picks, Downton Abbey and The Good Place, you're in the afterlife, and the wrinkle is you get to watch one of these every time like it's the first time. So for every rewatch, you get to the end and that portion of your memory is wiped clean. You have no knowledge of that show and you get to watch it like it's fresh every time. Which one is your Forever Show made new.
Okay, so the contrarian me is like, I reject because I feel like layers and history are like what makes people human, and like their memory makes them human. So I'm like terrified and anxious. So even though my memory will be wiped and I won't remember that I saw the show before, that I'm missing out on the layers of it.
Like, but you'll remember everything else. We're not wiping your entire memory. I know, just to be clear.
The shows are good because you remember them and want to watch them again. So now sure, I'm like, yeah. Thank you for robbing me of my one pleasure in the you know afterlife.
What? You could choose none. You could say, you know what? I don't want that. You can opt out. That if might you'd
be
like.
What I think that might be what I choose. I'd be like, I opt out. No, thank you. I will keep, even if I'm bored, I prefer the full human experience of boredom to like just like a baby's memory. Like I in the afterlife, I want to live.
You know, like. Oh my god, well I love that because that's the first time that's ever happened.
It so is
thank you, Laura.
And I love your reasoning because you're
yeah,
right,
like, that's a great reason.
If the whole point of a Forever Show is you like reliving it, then you're gonna want to relive it every time.
Yeah, I want to be like, oh good, it's this part I like again. Oh, I hate this part. Oh, I'm bored. Oh, like, oh god, like that actor. Oh.
Oh my god,
I love it. All right, so to recap your BFF criteria, Peaky Blinders and Ted Lasso are the best shows that Laura Van Holt has ever seen. Outlander and Sex and the City are your favorite shows, and you would watch Downton Abbey in The Good Place forever. I think this is a really fun list. I love it a lot. Brandy, of these six picks, what stands out the most to you?
I am very into Peaky Blinders and The Good Place. And I'm into both of them because I've started both of them and I want to finish them.
Right. You're literally into both of them.
Yeah, I'm literally into both of them. But I also really respect your take on loving Outlander, but like having real problems with how it progresses its storylines.
And I really wanted the show to fix it and they didn't. And so I'm like, of all the times to be true to the source material, like, ugh.
Dan, what stands out for you?
So I think this is a really fun list. It reminds me that I still need to watch Sex and the City, which I will do before the reboot. That's a blind spot that I have.
But the thing is, you don't have to have seen it. It's such a cultural touchstone that you don't have to have seen it. You know enough about it to talk about it. Yeah.
Right. But I want to see it. Like I've heard so much about it at this point that, you know, I feel like I've experienced some of the show through osmosis, but I actually want to experience the show. You know?
I would recommend like mixing a batch of Cosmos and wearing like a tutu and just like surrendering to the 2001 to 2 visceral experience.
And like watching it on your Mac laptop.
Right, exactly.
Maybe typing up some notes as you watch.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Getting to the movies, I'll get so drunk that I forget the second one even happened.
Yeah.
You know,
highly recommend that survival skill.
So we have another thing, Laura, which is, so before we sign off, we've got three lightning round questions.
Okay, love it.
So it's the opposite of the criteria, so don't overthink it and just kind of answer with the first thing that comes to mind. Number one, what is the one show that everyone raves about but that you've never gotten into?
Okay, I feel like I've just spent the whole podcast making people like me and now they're not gonna like me. Okay, I will preface with saying I haven't finished watching it. I still have one season to watch. But I don't like Schitt's Creek. I haven't laughed that much at it. And everyone tells me, like, fourth season, I promise. And I'm like, I'll watch it because he told me. But, like the fruit wine episode, great. Catherine O'Hara, great. Like, yes. Well, but, like, and I see glimmers so far of what people like about it. But so far, it has not hooked me. But I've been watching it because everyone tells me it will pay off. And I swear to God, if I get to the end of season four and I don't feel like it's paid off, I'm just going to talk about Friday Night Lights every time anybody talks about it. I swear to fucking God.
I mean, that sounds like a good compromise to me. Wow, that's, you know, slightly controversial take.
I know. I'm really, I don't think
anyone's gonna not like you for it because you're still putting in you're three seasons in. You haven't quit on it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, you're putting in the work.
Yeah, what do you think I'll get more hate for? Thinking that Tony Stark is just a wingman or not liking Schitt's Creek?
Tony Stark.
I know.
Tony Stark thing.
Come at me, bro. I will just
fanboys be coming at
fanboys. You're talking to one. Tony Stark's the guy who literally launched the MCU in 2008. I don't think he could be just the wingman, but it's fine. I get it.
I mean, I'll just start sending them Twilight quotes if they want to tweet at me about it.
Okay.
Good answer.
This one, I feel like was tailor-made for you, this question. What is a book or movie that you think should be adapted into a TV series?
We should really just limit it. It should just be book, though, for Laura. Yeah.
Yeah, we should just be a book. Yeah. What book should be adapted into a TV series?
Laura's like, how much time do you got?
I'm like, okay. No,
how many can I pick?
I'm like, I forget every book that has ever been written. The Bible? I don't know. Like, okay, so. Okay. Okay, no, actually, I got one. No, I got the best one. Okay, America, gird your loins. Okay, there is a book series called Immortals After Dark. And it is by Cressley Cole, and it is 18 books long, and it is magnificent, and it was born for television. It's about the lore, which, like, every 500 years, there's, like, werewolves, vampires, Valkyries, like, all sorts of supernatural characters. They have to have these, like, battles, and, like, it's to kind of, like, call the population, because immortals live forever. So in this series, it's like the time for that big battle thing again. And like all these different alliances get made. Every book is a different romance, but also within it, there's this kind of like, you know, immortals can't do marathons. So they have this like amazing race, like competition where they're always trying to find like this, like one artifact that will give them this power that will like help them succeed in this big battle. And every book is different romance between like a vampire and a werewolf or like a Valkyrie. Okay. But my favorite one is a standalone, and you can read it without having to like read all other 18 ones, and it's called Dark Needs at Night's Edge, and it is a ballerina who was murdered on like the opening night of one of her big shows in New Orleans in like a mansion, and she was murdered and it's like every night on the full moon she has to relive her murdering, so she's just like this ghost that like keeps getting murdered over and over again, and this vampire for some reason has to hide out in her like old mansion that nobody lives in, and they fall in love, and you're like, how is a ghost with no body gonna do it with a vampire, because like and they figure it out. But it's like, it's so great. It's so much like drama. It's so much action. There's romance. There's like vampires, werewolves, supernatural characters.
I mean, this sounds like it should be on Netflix.
Yeah. Like it's like, there's like an amazing race. Like they're through like the jungles in Brazil trying to like, you know, like getting trapped by like evil succubi and like having their will to live like strained from them. And then like someone rescues that. Like it's great.
Yeah. This sounds like True Blood meets Amazing Race meets seven other things that all make sense, and this should all be
okay. So last lightning round question is, what is a recent series that you've been obsessed with that people should check out?
Oh, everything I just said. Okay, no. What else have I been watching? Well, I think everybody is obsessed with The Crown already, but like I think watching The Crown the first season when Queen Elizabeth is very young is very interesting to be like, oh, remember she was like young and in love and was like, whoa, I didn't think I'd be queen so fast. You know, that's nice. But now that it's getting like more into the modern times and we've got all the stuff going on with like Meghan Markle and Prince Harry, and then we've got like the Diana years and The Crown, like, so here's where I think is very interesting watching it with like what we know today is that like Queen Elizabeth only becomes queen because her uncle abdicated because he wanted to marry a divorced American woman, right? And then like by the time the queen is 90, so that's like, you know, that it rips apart like the fabric of the monarchy and really changes things up and like traumatizing, like, you know, like Queen Elizabeth was just going to be like a country girl with like a title. And then all of a sudden she's like a queen for 70 years. And then by the time she's 90, like her grandson marries a biracial divorced American actress. And she's like, thumbs up. Love her. Like, what? Like anything can happen. like believe in yourself.
You know? Like real-time character growth, guys. Real-time character growth.
Yeah. I love it.
But no, this was, Laura, I'm so glad that you were able to do this. This was really awesome.
I'm so glad you asked me. It gave me a lot to think about. I was like, because at first, of course, I panicked for 3 straight days and was like, I remember no TV shows. And then I was like, that, you know what I was wishing I had is that like I don't like Goodreads, but I keep track of how I read on there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I wish I had like one, if anyone wants to start an app, like one thing where I could just be like, I read this, I like this, I reviewed it, and would serve me like, yeah.
I do my own. I call it my media diet. It's just a note on my phone. And every day as I watch, like I've listened to these podcasts, I watch these shows, I finish this book, I saw this comedy show or this event. Like, I just kind of like track what I'm consuming.
That's great. That's a great idea. Yeah, that's really
great. I stole it from Steven Soderbergh. It's not my idea. He does it every year.
I don't know him. Like that. So.
But with that, that's a wrap on this episode of TV BFFs. Thank you so, so much. This was so much fun. Laura Van Holt, thank you so much for coming on. Where can we find you and what are you up to?
Yeah, so I'm just working on writing my little romance novel and changing the world one love story at a time. You can buy my books at lauralovelybooks.com and you can find me and all of my podcasts at lauravonholt.com.
Awesome. Please check out Laura. Please rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast if you haven't yet already. You can check us out on Instagram at TVBFFpodcast or send us an email. Get in touch at TVBFFpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, we would love to hear from you. So reach out and send us your six. We want to know your top six shows of all time and where they fall on your own personal BFF criteria. So send us your picks and we'll share our favorites on the podcast. Until next time, goodbye, friends.
Bye, friends.